We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The Senate hearings on Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court begin with Democratic Senate protests and the arrest of protesters, even in the hearing room. What's behind this, the passions and the partisan face-off? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal, here with my colleagues, Bill McGurn. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Paul.
And Kim Strassel. Kim, welcome.
Hi.
So let's talk about these hearings. Kim, you've been listening to them. Rather extraordinary beginning. Chuck Grassley, the Senate Judiciary Committee chairman, couldn't even get through his opening statement before Democrats interrupted and demanded a postponement. What case were they making?
Well, the case that they're making is that they have not yet received all the documents they want. This is, of course, a ludicrous suggestion. Not only are all of Kavanaugh's opinions there for the reading, but they've received more than 170,000 documents. So this is, in essence, just it's an opportunity. They don't want to have to hold a vote on him, certainly not before the election. So they've been demanding a postponement. There is no real good reason for one. So they've come up with the document fiction. But the thing that was extraordinary was just the way that they did it. They continued to interrupt. They kept demanding motions and postponements. And this all seemed designed to completely upset and potentially derail the beginning of the hearings.
Clearly orchestrated, Bill. I mean, the Democrats kind of went through one after another here. So they came in with a game plan. Try to suggest that the hearings are somehow unfair and being rushed, but they are starting about 2 months or so after the nomination of Kavanaugh. That's within a reasonable time frame that of recent Supreme Court nominees. So that's hardly extraordinary. On the document front, I've been doing some looking into this, and it's really followed this very similar document production path that the Democrats followed for Elena Kagan when she was nominated by Barack Obama. Some of her documents from being in the Solicitor General's office in the White House were not provided because they were deemed by the Obama administration to be the product of executive deliberation, though they certainly would have related very much to how she would serve on the Supreme Court. They also withheld some documents from her time in the counsel's office at the White House that were dealing with executive deliberation. Some of the complaints are odd because Grassley has given staff access and Senate access to something like 170,000 documents that they can go in and 147, I think, is actually it. They can go in and read if they want in a secure room in the White House. I mean, on the Capitol. And at least in my reporting yesterday, not a single senator had availed himself or herself of that opportunity.
Yeah, I think what you're getting to, Paul, is what Senator Grassley put in his letter, I believe, to Senator Schumer about the Democrat request for documents, that it's not sincere. Most of them have come out publicly already saying who they're going to vote for. What they're not interested in is what hearings are supposed to be about, judicial philosophy and so forth. And Brett has a long record there that they could easily look through. It's basically an admission that they don't have anything substantive. They're trying to delay. So their only tactics are disrupt, delay, and slander.
Kim, you were listening to Senator Dick Durbin's opening statement. I didn't get a chance to catch it, but I gather it was particularly personal in terms of an attack on Kavanaugh.
Yeah, and we should note that Grassley, to his credit, did not let any of this derail the hearing. In fact, he got pretty back in the face of a couple of people suggesting that this was out of the ordinary or that he was breaking with procedure. He looked as though he'd lost his patience at one point. And so we progressed to what today was supposed to be about, which is all the senators reading their opening statements and laying the groundwork. And Dick Durbin's was one for the ages. It was extraordinary. You know, the tradition on both sides has always been to use these hearings to attack the judicial philosophy of a nominee. But this is very different. The Democrats here, and Durbin's was really very aggressive, but Pat Leahy spoke before him, and also the same manner. They are, in a very coordinated way, launching vicious personal accusations against Brett Kavanaugh, suggesting that he is corrupt, that a corrupt Donald Trump is putting him on the court in order to rubber stamp his own corruption, that he is a liar, a sneak, morally bankrupt. It's just beyond the pale, especially given that whatever you may think about Brett Kavanaugh's judicial philosophy, he has sat in good standing on the D.C. circuit for years. No one has ever impugned his ethics or his moral integrity. And so this is new and really low.
What is the corruption charge? Because that hasn't been made public that I have seen.
Well, it's fact-free, of course, but, you know, I think, and I'm paraphrasing here because obviously I didn't write it down, but Dick Durbin said, you know, we have a president that does all these terrible things, and he's your man. Why do you think that is? I mean, you're his man. Why do you think that is?
Well, because he wants to fill a Supreme Court seat.
But the suggestion, though, being that, you know, Brett Kavanaugh will close his eyes to the crimes that are ultimately brought in front of the Supreme Court.
This is the argument that because Michael Cohen copped a plea and therefore and implicated Trump in some potential criminal behavior, that somehow Kavanaugh would wink at this because he was appointed by Trump. My own knowledge of Kavanaugh suggests that that is far from the truth, but that seems to be the argument.
Yes, that is the argument. And, you know, and then they've also claimed that if these documents were to be revealed, they would show that Brett Kavanaugh had lied in his prior confirmation hearing. Again, I see no evidence of that whatsoever, but it seems to be another theme that they are regurgitating throughout this.
Well, on those documents, one other thing that Grassley has done, which had not been, in addition to opening them up to all staff, which had not been done before, is to say to the senators, look, if there are some documents that you see in your personal inspection among these 147,000 that you think should be disclosed, I'm willing to work with you and go with you to make the request to the Trump White House to release them. And that's already happened in one case. They were some of the documents related to his view of Kavanaugh's view of interrogations has been released. There could be others if they wanted to take advantage of them. Of course, the senators would then have to do the legwork to go in and look at the documents or their staff. But the fact that they haven't or the fact that they haven't called for those documents to be released suggests to me that, in fact, there's not much explosive there, because if there were, they would demand that they be made public.
Right. I think there are two points about that. One is something the editorials have made clear since Brett was nominated for the Supreme Court. The demand for documents was initially a demand that they hoped would take so long that it would push this back past the election so that the Democratic senators running in Trump states could avoid a vote. That was really what it was about, a delaying action. So it's not surprising that they're not interested in the substance of it. First of all, they know that there's no there there. Second, to regard to Senator Durbin's point about Judge Kavanaugh lying in 2006, you know, a lot of this, there are two issues. One is his role. They want to know his role in the so-called torture policy and so forth. Brett was not read into the program. I think that's pretty clear, and no one's challenged that. So he didn't really have any role in this. The other thing that they're talking about is Brett's role in advising the president. What he advised the president, I think, is that Justice Kennedy would not look kindly on an effort to deprive enemy combatants of lawyers if they are brought to the U.S. I think that was his sole
advice. That turned out to be exactly right.
He had clerked for Judge Kennedy and knew it. So, you know, the problem is this stuff is all in the past. So people like Senator Durbin think they throw a mud ball today. People don't remember the details and everything, and it just sounds sinister because they throw around words like torture and so forth. And then added to that is just we have a class of professional disruptors that follow, you know, whether it's the Trump inaugural or this. I mean, one of those taken out today was Linda Sarsour, you know, who helped lead the Women's March, has been a big critic of Israel and a backer of the divestment movement. I mean, this is what people do for their livelihoods, basically. They're professional grievance mongers.
We're talking about the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You can now listen to Potomac Watch on your Amazon smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. And Kim, I guess the question is, how does all of this play politically? Democrats want to delay the hearings if possible, delay the vote if possible. Republicans, being in the majority, have the power to move the nomination forward as long as they stay united. But I guess the question is, Democrats want to show their voters who are passionately anti-Trump and believe the Supreme Court is one of the main battlegrounds of American politics, that they're fighting to stop Kavanaugh. So are these histrionics at the hearing by the senators and the document production debate and the extraordinarily nasty questioning, is this really something that they're trying to show the base that they're willing to fight and they're passionate just like them, and in the end they're going to allow the vote to go forward, or will they try to block a vote altogether? Because unless you have a Senate Democrat showing up at the hearing, you can deny them a vote unless under current Senate rules.
Well, look, I think it's both. I think the goals and the strategy you see here was this initial attempt to complain, launch motions, and try to postpone this. And all the while, as you say, with the goal that even if we can't postpone it, even if we can't derail it, we will show our base that we are fighting. It looks as though Democrats have not, at this point, gone so far as to decide they will not show up or boycott this. One would hope that maybe they have understood that some of these breaking of precedents and norms sometimes can boomerang on you. Of course, one of the reasons that we can have 50 votes to confirm Brett Kavanaugh these days and we no longer have a filibuster is because Harry Reid got rid of that for certain nominees back when he was still in charge, and Republicans extended that rule. So they don't seem to have gone that far yet. But the question to me is, there can be no doubt that these kind of theatrics will probably gin up their base. They're hoping that they could at least use the hearings for that. But how do they play with the average American that turns this on? Because, you know, the record is out there. This is a guy who served honorably on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. American Bar Association gives it highest rating. He's clearly more than qualified to sit on the Supreme Court. And you see these people leveling these accusations and engaging in theatrics worthy of grade school children. And I'm not sure that helps them with those moderate or independent voters, especially in tough states like, I don't know, North Dakota or Indiana or Missouri, where they have Senate nominees who are not on this committee up for re-election, but who are going to potentially pay the price of these kind of dramatics.
There are a lot of people, Bill, in and I've spoken to a couple of them today, who in the Kavanaugh camp, who are really concerned about the possibility of a Democratic boycott. That passions are high enough that they may want to say, "Look, we're going to force you to change the Senate rules." Now, from where I sit, it doesn't look like that would be great politics if it lasted for any length of time leading up to the election. Mainly because I think the American public says, "Well, wait a minute, you've nominated a candidate. He's by all accounts." I mean, nobody's saying he's unqualified. Nobody's saying he's – well, people are suggesting somehow a quid pro quo corruption with Trump, though there's no evidence of any of that. So you end up with the question of, really, are you going to be that disruptive? I think that hurts some of the Senate candidates, as Kim suggested.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a split in the Democratic Party over this. Look, I think it hurts – the Heidi Heitkamps, the Joe Donnellys, and Joe Manchins, because you can just imagine.
They're running for re-election.
Running this year in Trump states. And you can imagine the ads tying them to the disruptors. Look, Kim talked about these guys behaving like grade school children. Well, Brett had his two grade school daughters in that room who had to be escorted out, obviously a little afraid seeing people scream at their father. I'm not sure that plays with the average American who probably doesn't follow the ins and outs of every memo. Where it may play well for some senators is Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, who are trying to run for the nomination, right?
For president.
For president. So they're probably all very willing to give up any chance of a Democratic majority in the Senate if they feel that there's a way for them to prove to the base that they're the truest blue of the blue. And so I think there's this tension. I think Senator Schumer is at the heart of that tension. He is, you know, Democrats traditionally get their candidates from the U.S. Senate, right? And there's a lot of them that might be in line for the nomination. And they're very much opposed to the Joe Manchins and Heidi Heitkamps and Joe Donnellys in terms of their interests.
But I can tell you that that Chuck Schumer is not somebody who would like to forego the chance of,
exactly.
of a majority. So in the end, I suspect that he gives if this appear even if this is a very contentious hearing and a very partisan hearing, which it will be, that at the end of the day, if it looks like Kavanaugh is going to be confirmed, you're likely to see Chuck Schumer say to Heidi Heitkamp and Joe Donnelly and Joe Manchin and some others, you vote the way you think is best for your state.
And for my potential Senate Majority Leader title.
No question.
That gets to one other thing is, you know, what if you're a Democrat would be the ultimate goal of this? You know, you're attempting to stop the successful confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. To do that, you need to convince Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski and maybe other moderates in the Republican camp that he should not be voted for. It's very difficult for me to understand how what we just witnessed here today in any way moves the ball toward that goal, in that this is just likely to unify Republicans who feel as though Democrats are using unprecedented tactics and unfair tactics to go after a nominee who deserves to be able to go through the normal process. And I'd argue that Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski would feel more defensive of him after something like this than they would the other direction.
And Paul, I'll point out something. You said, look, a lot of the people who supported Donald Trump in the election, or the marginal supporters, did so for one reason, the Supreme Court, right? That was, for a lot of people, that was the main reason for their vote. So there's a Trump base on this side, too, and not just his base of all Trump supporters, but people who think the court's very, very important. So this kind of stuff could turn out a lot of those people as well.
The hearings are going to continue for at least 3 or 4 days, and senators, being senators, are going to take the bulk of the time on Tuesday to issue their opening statements. And questioning of Kavanaugh gets going in earnest on Wednesday. Thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.